Are we good now? Okay. All right. This is the meeting of the Commission on the Selection and Tenure of Administrative Law Judges, and it is now called to order. This meeting is called for the purpose of considering and are voting on the reappointment of Administrative Law Judge Audrey Jenkins. I'll now conduct a roll call. Each member, please signify their attendance by saying present. I, Judge Yvonne Williams, am present. Joe Onick.
Present.
Nadine Wilburn.
Present.
Rob Hawkins.
Present.
Chief Judge Adams.
Present.
I ascertain that all the voting members are present, therefore a quorum is established. I have reviewed the agenda and there is a slight change. Pursuant to a February 26th email I did receive from Judge England in his capacity as acting president of the ALJ Union, he along with Judge Jenkins will address the commission this morning. He'll be addressing on the commission on Judge Jenkins's behalf. So I'm going to move this revision in the agenda be included and that the revised agenda be adopted. So is that seconded?
Second.
Okay. All in favor of revising the agenda accordingly?
Aye.
All right. Therefore, the revised agenda is therefore adopted as the official agenda for this meeting. Again, noting that Judge England is here in his capacity as acting president of the ALJ Union here at OAH, acting on behalf of ALJ Jenkins. Okay. So we'll move forward with the hearing with respect to Judge Jenkins. I will allow OAH to state briefly what their position is, and then Judge England and perhaps Judge Jenkins may respond.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'd just like to briefly explain and just give you a little background about why we're here. In August, Chief Judge Adams submitted a recommendation for the reappointment of Judge Audrey Jenkins. It was a qualified recommendation. In his letter, he discussed some complaints and issues related to Judge Jenkins and some conversations that he had with Judge Jenkins and where Judge Jenkins assured him that she would be more mindful with her interactions with her colleagues, the litigants, and attorneys. Chief Judge Adams took her for that word and recommended her for reappointment. At the end of September, I believe it was September 29th, at another COST meeting, the COST asked Chief Judge Adams to report research on the impact of some absences of judges related to administrative leave. And at the same time, Judge Jenkins offered her unsolicited statements regarding her work. She said that all of her cases were cleared and none had been neglected prior to her going on leave. So after that statement and the request by the COST to research the impact of leave of about four judges, Chief Judge Adams looked into this. He looked into everyone's caseloads and whatnot, and you saw the letter about the impact. However, with Judge Jenkins, what he found was troubling and quite the contrary to what she stated in the COST meeting. And additionally, at the same time, as we all know, the OAH was under increased scrutiny from the public and in some instances its own employees. So therefore, we had to address, respond, and research Judge Jenkins' misstatement. In a nutshell, Judge Jenkins, in her own words and in her writings and submissions since that, has given us some rationale and excuses for why her work was not done, either reassigned, or just nothing has been done. A few of the things she says is there was nothing she could do without her appointment. She said that cases that were hers that were reassigned was not her responsibility. She also states that judicial independence controls her caseload, how she runs her cases. Also, sometimes it's a big miscommunication of what's been happening and why things were done. Also, she'll state the parties that are complaining, they're just angry. And finally, she stated that probably some of the excuses is because OH staff only have high school diplomas. What we just ask you today is to, instead of looking at her excuses, please look at the facts that we've put in Chief Judge Adams' letter not recommending her reappointment. And to let you know, we are here if you have any questions or would like more of our response. Thank you.
All right. Judge Jenkins, did you have a statement on behalf of Judge Jenkins?
Yes. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Williams and other members of the commission. As you know, my name is William L. England, Jr., and I am the acting president of the Federation of Administrative Law Judges, D.C., the sole representative of the collective bargaining unit for the administrative law judges in the Office of Administrative Hearings, or OAH, as we refer to ourselves. I am here today to urge the voting members of the commission to favorably consider my colleague, Administrative Law Judge Audrey Jenkins' request for reappointment to a six-year term as an administrative law judge. Judge Jenkins is a graduate of the University of South Carolina, magna cum laude, and the Georgetown University Law Center. On August 15, 2005, Judge Jenkins was appointed to a two-year term as an administrative law judge, and 2 years later was appointed to a 10-year term. During Judge Jenkins' 12-year tenure as an administrative law judge, all of her performance evaluations were positive, and she was never the subject of any disciplinary action. Over a year ago, on January 31, 2017, Judge Jenkins submitted a timely request for reappointment as her 10-year appointment would expire on August 15, 2017. However, as all of us are aware, during the summer of 2017, the commission did not timely act on the reappointment request of several ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, before the expiration of their terms. I will not rehash the reasons for this problem, but it is important to emphasize that their terms expired without a reappointment decision by the commission for reasons totally beyond the control of Judge Jenkins or any of the impacted ALJs. On August 9, 2017, I wrote to Chief Administrative Law Judge Adams and asked him to clarify the work status of six FALJ DC members, including ALJ Jenkins, whose terms were about to expire. I also asked Chief Judge Adams to promptly notify the affected ALJs whether they would continue to be paid their salaries and to advise the ALJs of their work status after their terms expired, pending reappointment action by the commission. On August 10, 2017, Chief Judge Adams wrote to Judge Jenkins that the expiration of her current appointment was almost at hand and that he had recommended that she be reappointed. In that same letter, Chief Judge Adams stated that if the commission did not reappoint before the expiration of her term, she would be, quote, legally precluded from carrying out her responsibilities as an ALJ, close quote. Chief Judge Adams further stated that, quote, although the law creating OAH authorizes you to continue working in an attorney capacity during this interim, I cannot compel you and would not. Instead, on the expiration of your current appointment and without an official decision from COST, you will be placed on administrative leave with pay until you have been reappointed, close quote. Shortly thereafter, Judge Jenkins and other similarly situated ALJs accepted Chief Judge Adams' decision as the agency head to put them on administrative leave, and when their terms expired, they went on administrative leave as instructed. I would like to emphasize at this point that after an ALJ's term expires without a reappointment decision by the commission, his or her work status is a matter left to the sole discretion of the Chief Administrative Law Judge. After Judge Jenkins' terms expired, Chief Judge Adams had two choices regarding her work status. Choice one, under the commission's ALJ reappointment regulations, Chief Adams could have exercised his discretion to retain ALJ Jenkins, quote, as a non-judicial employee of the office until the commission votes on reappointment, close quote. I'm citing that from 6B, District of Columbia Municipal Regulations 3705.26. Choice two, Chief Judge Adams could exercise his discretion as agency head to put Judge Jenkins on administrative leave. Faced with these two decisions, these two choices, rather, Chief Judge Adams decided not to exercise his discretion to retain Judge Jenkins as a non-judicial employee. He instead decided to exercise his discretion to put Judge Jenkins on administrative leave. Chief Judge Adams is solely accountable for making this choice, and the voting members of the commission should not punish Judge Jenkins for Chief Judge Adams' decision regarding her work status after her term expired. I would like to emphasize at this point that if the commission had timely convened before August 15th to consider Chief Judge Adams' August 10th, 2017, favorable reappointment recommendation for Judge Jenkins, we would not be here today. Judge Jenkins had no control over the commission's decision regarding the timing of its reappointment vote, and she should not be punished for anything connected to this delay, including Chief Judge Adams' belated withdrawal of his favorable recommendation.
I'm sorry, I just got to ask one question.
Sir.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to make sure that I understand your point. Is it your point that, if I'm understanding you correctly, that because Chief Judge Adams did not specifically assign ALJ Jenkins, or Judge Jenkins, excuse me, work in a non-judicial capacity in that interim period where she was put on leave, that's what you're saying? It was Chief Judge Adams' responsibility to do that and not Judge Jenkins?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure. Thank you.
After the commission meeting on July 19, 2017, it did not convene again to consider reappointments of ALJs until September 29, 2017. Therefore, for at least 45 days during this period, five ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, could not do their jobs because their terms had expired. At its meeting on September 29, 2017, the voting members of the commission expressed outrage at the use of paid administrative leave for ALJs with expired terms. But instead of directing their outrage at Chief Judge Adams for making this decision, they blamed the ALJs who accepted the Chief Judge's decision and did what they were told. Instead of voting on the reappointment of these ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, the commission asked Chief Judge Adams to submit a report about the impact of the administrative leave taken after these judges' appointments expired. At the September 29, 2017 meeting, Judge Jenkins was the only ALJ to publicly speak up to the commission on behalf of herself and the other ALJs to clarify and emphasize that she was placed on paid administrative leave by Chief Judge Adams. She truthfully stated to the commission that she and the other ALJs had been notified by Chief Judge Adams that they were placed on administrative leave after their terms expired. Because the commission had expressed its disapproval of their administrative leave status, four ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, returned to their office, but they still could not do their jobs as ALJs because their terms had expired, and the commission had decided to defer taking action on their reappointments. The four ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, returned to their office on October 2nd, 2017. Shortly thereafter, Judge Jenkins met with Chief Judge Adams, who told her that he was mad at her for speaking up at the September 29th commission meeting. He also expressed his displeasure with the role of FALJDC in questioning some of the commission's reappointment decisions. On or about October 26, 2017, almost 4 weeks after the four ALJs, including Judge Jenkins, returned to the office in a non-judicial capacity, Chief Judge Adams wrote to the commission regarding the impact of administrative leave on OAH operations. In his letter to the commission, Chief Judge Adams denied ever putting Judge Jenkins and the other ALJs on administrative leave, despite the explicit written notice putting them on administrative leave. Chief Judge Adams also stated, among other things, that three of the four ALJs' performances as adjudicators qualified them for reappointment, and that he unenthusiastically recommended their reappointment. However, He stated that he had additional concerns about Judge Jenkins that he would address in a separate letter. On November 15, 2017, the commission reappointed three ALJs but continued to defer action on Judge Jenkins. By letter to the commission dated December 26, 2017, Chief Judge Adams withdrew his earlier recommendation that Judge Jenkins be reappointed. In this letter, Chief Judge Adams specifically attributes his reversal to Judge Jenkins' 6 weeks of administrative leave that he initiated, as well as her statements to the commission on September 29, 2017. The incidents and work-related complaints that Chief Judge Adams now offers against Judge Jenkins are taken out of context, are wrongfully attributed to Judge Jenkins, or are inaccurate reflections of what actually transpired. Judge Jenkins has responded to these allegations in her letter to the commission dated February 1, 2018. However, I would like to emphasize at this point that all of these incidents and work-related complaints occurred before Chief Judge Adams recommended Judge Jenkins' reappointment on August 10, 2017. Moreover, it was not until after Judge Jenkins spoke up for herself and the other three ALJs at the commission meeting on September 29, 2017, about the reasons she was on administrative leave, the Chief Judge expressed any concerns about her fitness to serve as an ALJ. This fact alone should give the commission pause to question whether Chief Judge Adams' decision to withdraw his previous recommendation that Judge Jenkins be appointed should be given significant weight. The rules governing the reappointment of ALJ state that the commission, quote, shall reappoint the administrative law judge if it finds that the administrative law judge has satisfactorily performed the responsibilities of his or her office and is likely to continue to do so. Quoting from 6B, District of Columbia Municipal Regulations 3705.21. The fact that Judge Jenkins has served as an ALJ for 12 years with only positive performance evaluations and no disciplinary actions is prima facie evidence that she satisfactorily performed the responsibilities of her office and is likely to continue to do so. Unless Chief Judge Adams has communicated information about Judge Jenkins to one or more members of the commission that he has not shared with her, which would be not only unfair but a violation of fundamental due process, I submit that the commission has no factual basis to find that Judge Jenkins has not satisfactorily performed the responsibility of her office and is not likely to continue to do so. The commission's own ALJ reappointment rules state that, quote, the voting members shall give significant weight to the recommendations of the Chief Administrative Law Judge unless they determine that the recommendation is not founded on substantial evidence. Therefore, the voting members of the commission are the only line of defense available to ALJs whose reappointment requests are opposed by a chief ALJ for nefarious or capricious reasons. I respectfully submit to the commission today that this is the case and that the evidence requires you to counter the recommendation of Chief Judge Adams and reappoint Judge Jenkins to another 6-year term as an ALJ. In conclusion, members of the commission, nobody should lose their job for correcting the record at a public meeting. Nobody should lose their job for complying with an agency head's decision to put them on administrative leave. And nobody should lose their job for failing to do adjudicatory work after their authority to work has been stripped away through no fault of their own. That is all that is going on here. The voting members of the commission should not condone it, much less support it. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have regarding my statement.
I just have one or two questions. You would agree, pursuant to the regulations, that this is a hearing for reappointment, correct?
Certainly.
And no one is guaranteed a reappointment, is that right? For your understanding of the regulations.
The regulations say, Judge Williams, that the commission will reappoint a judge if they have performed their term satisfactorily and are likely to continue to do so. That's what it says. It doesn't say it's guaranteed.
Right. That was just my question, whether or not it's a guaranteed reappointment. And then my second-ish question is, there were 5 judges who were subject to delayed reappointment last summer in August. Is that correct?
At least 5, yes.
No, there were 5, right?
Oh, you want to count them?
Well, I mean, it was from your, that's the number that you just read in your statement. Okay, said 5 initially.
That's not including, I think, Judge Good.
No, I think that does include Judge Good.
Okay,
well, you can count them. Let me know.
We have Judge Good. We have Judge Harvey. We have Judge Teal. We have Judge
Tucker.
Tucker.
And Judge Jenkins. So that's 5.
5.
4 judges went on leave, correct?
Goody.
Oh, and Judge Goody. So there were 6 judges. So how many judges went on leave, according to your statement? You went through a lot of facts. I just want to make sure that we're clear.
4 judges were placed on leave. You can't put yourself on administrative leave.
So you're saying only of the judges that had been delayed, only 4 of them were placed on leave?
Well, no. Judge Good was placed on leave.
That's 5, right?
Okay. Judge Good, Judge Teal.
So 5 judges were placed on leave. The 6th judge, although her appointment had expired as well, she wasn't placed on leave. I'm just seeking clarification, if you know.
Okay. All I know is what the chief judge wrote to Judge Jenkins, and my understanding from the other 4 judges that they were placed on administrative leave. I'm not privy to what he communicated to Judge Goody or Judge Cobbs.
Okay. So the only information you know is as it relates to those judges who took leave, who were on leave.
Who were placed on administrative leave.
And you have no information.
I'd like to just state for the record, Judge Williams, as far as I know in the District of Columbia, no District of Columbia government employee can place themselves on paid administrative leave.
Okay.
So if Judge Jenkins and any of these other judges were on paid administrative leave, they were placed there by the agency head, Chief Judge Adams.
All right, so now we'll rephrase my language. It is your understanding that the chief judge placed 5 of the 6 judges whose terms had expired last August when the cost was delayed. Only 5 of those, your understanding from what you know, mm-hmm. the facts that you understand is only 5 of the 6 were placed on administrative leave by the chief.
My understanding is that Judge Jenkins, Judge Tucker, Judge Teal, Judge Harvey, and Judge Good were placed on administrative leave by the chief. Yes.
So you don't know anything about the 6th judge?
Mm-hmm. Didn't communicate it to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does anyone have any other questions for Judge Englund? All right.
Thank you for your attention. I have printed copies of my statement if you need them for the record.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. Judge Jenkins, did you want to make a statement?
Well, Judge Englund has made the statement that I've asked him to make. I have had 12 years. I have enjoyed my 12 years. I have handled over 10,000 cases in that period of time. All of my orders, everything that I have done, has been reviewed under the peer review system. So each principal that I've worked with, and other judges in the office that have had experiences in any of the areas that I've worked with, they have all reviewed everything that I've done. So there have been no problems with my work up to this point.
All right. Did anyone have any specific questions for Judge Jenkins? I mean, is there anything that you wanted to say specifically about the cases that were identified by Chief Judge?
Well,
you don't have to. I just want to make sure you have as much opportunity as possible to respond.
Mm-hmm. I address those
in writing.
In writing. Each and every one in writing.
And just so I'm clear, because obviously
the only cast member who actually works at OEH is the chief judge. So when you say the peer review process, that is the process whereby your colleagues, chosen, I guess, through some process, review your final writing work product?
That is correct.
Okay.
And we also discuss processes of how we're going to go about coming to resolutions. We have the opportunity to sit down and talk about cases and which direction they're going to go in and how we feel about it, and to, you know, sort of brainstorm if we choose to do so, yes.
Okay. So in the process of this peer review, are your colleagues, do they read the motions? Do they read the motions and oppositions and rebuttals that are submitted to you before they review your final work product?
Of course.
Well, if I may interject, mm-hmm. ma'am, it depends on the jurisdiction. I mean, some jurisdictions, for example, unemployment jurisdictions where I worked for a long time, in fact, I was a principal administrative law judge for that jurisdiction for a while, specifically prescribes certain ALJs to review a given ALJ's work. And they rotate those PRS partners to make sure that all of the judges in the jurisdiction get the benefit of looking at some of the writing products of final orders, if you will, of the various judges, and also to get a feel for how they do it. In the UI jurisdiction, it was not normal that all of the submissions would be submitted to the peer review judge unless they wanted to ask about it, and they could. And on many occasions, I know in my case, I would go to a colleague and say, look, this is the situation I have here. What do you think about it? This is what I got from them, and this is what I'm thinking about responding to. But it's not a requirement, at least not in UI. I'm not familiar as much with the jurisdiction that Judge Jenkins was in.
Okay. Well, you know, I'd also like to add that if I've got a situation that has never happened before, particularly in a case where Judge Barber was suddenly removed from the case and the entire record was already made, you know, I'm going to go to someone and say, look, you know, this is the situation, and this is how I'm thinking about dealing with it and working with it and working through it. I am going to go and sit down with someone who has been at OAH for many, many years, and I'm going to find the most senior judge that I can find to sit down and talk with them. And then once I've talked with them and made a decision as to how I'm going to approach the problem and then write the order, I'm going to have that judge sit down and read it. And sometimes two or three, depending on the issues in the case. And we also look at what the ramifications are. Sometimes we look at, you know, what prior decisions have occurred, or what has been the impact, you know, in the past. So it helps to have people that have had a history in working in the agency and working with senior judges.
Well, when you have those meetings, I understand cases get transferred. That's a common occurrence as judges move to different calendars. Cases get transferred, and I guess you were in receipt of.
Well, it doesn't happen.
I haven't asked my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You were in receipt of one of Judge Barber's prior matters, and I guess the point of concern was, and it relates back to what you just stated, is on the same day you were apparently were assigned the case, you reversed the order. So I'm just trying, so how much did you, and it was a case that had been litigated for the past 6 months. So in that matter, which was addressed, I think, by the chief judge, did you then talk to a colleague, and how much of the record did you read prior to talking to your colleague so your colleague could give you an advice that was relevant to the record that had been done? Just you say you talk to colleagues, but how much do you know before you talk to colleagues so that you can get the most informed advice?
Sure. I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years, so it doesn't take me forever to read a record of cases where I've done like hundreds and hundreds of the same notice of violation, a notice of infraction in the case of a DCRA case. So it doesn't take me forever to sit there and go through and read. And so when I went through and read, I found in that case there were technical errors. I don't want to go into what happened prior to my being assigned to the case. But there was also, from what I can recall, the situation where there was a structure that was already built and that was impacting the structure that was being complained about. And the government basically said, well, we can't do anything about it. I mean, you know, without a building permit. The respondent she was absolutely livid, and she wanted to know, well, where is Judge Barber? Where is she? Why isn't she on this case, and what's going on? So, I mean, that was where I think the office, you know, had the concern, you know, to try to deal with that situation. I felt that in looking at that case, that the entire case needed to be remanded back to DCRA to try to straighten that out. And that is within my judicial independent discretion to be able to do that and to make that decision. And I did talk to another senior judge who had worked in that area from the beginning of the agency, giving her the opportunity to go back to DCRA would have given her a shot at being able to start all over. And then if she had any problems after that, and if DCRA couldn't correct it or didn't correct it to her satisfaction, then she could appeal again. At the time that I had received the case, her appeal time had expired. If I recall correctly, her appeal time had expired.
Right. So I think that an appellate notice had been filed when you got the case, is my understanding.
Well, I'm not sure because, you know, all my files, I was locked out of my office. All my files were.
Right. So this happened in February. Right. And so you were working in February, correct?
Yes,
I
was working in February, but again, it is within my discretion to decide how to handle the case.
I think you're entirely right, and DaCosta does not want to impinge on a judge's authority to do what they think the law interpret the law how they think it should be interpreted. I have no problem with that. I think the only issue that was raised by the chief was the quickness with which your decision
came.
I think that was the concern, that you had been transferred a case on February 17th and issued a reversal on February 17th. Well, and it just seems, just as a judge, it just seems that there would be no time to review the record. But I hear your position, and I understand what you're saying in terms of that you've had experience with these matters and you don't need to sort of
Well, I did read it. I read it.
You read six months of litigation and background?
Yes, I can do that because I understand the issues in the case, mm-hmm. and because I do them all day long every day.
I understand.
And Judge Williams, as a judge myself, and as you well know, that if you've been doing a calendar for a long time, you've seen and heard most mm-hmm. everything.
That's true.
And you can size up mm-hmm. a case fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's out of whack for a judge to be able to review a case in several hours, you know, and make a decision about what has to be done next. You're not making a dispositive decision about me.
Mm-mm-mm. No.
I mean, well, okay, I guess I have OEH.
Judge Williams,
respond.
Can I just correct the record?
Okay.
So that case that we're talking about, it was 7 hours of courtroom time, 25 docket entries, 5 hearings. On February 4th, Judge Barber issued a 35-page findings of fact and conclusions of law. That was very dense. She did correct some technical stuff, it appeared, from the previous order. Judge Jenkins received the case, you know, I guess it was transferred to her on February 16th, and on February 17th, on February 15th, I'm trying to think when the motion came in. A motion came in 2 weeks later on February 15th from DCRA and the builder requesting, you know, to reopen. We have new evidence. Judge Jenkins ruled on that the very next day after reviewing the record, and she reversed Judge Barber. So Judge Barber revoked the building permit. Judge Jenkins reversed it, gave them the building permit, and the problems with this are not her judicial independence, but her following of our court rules and regulations. In granting the motion, she did not follow the OAH rule that says you have to issue an order and allow the other party to respond. Hey, this is my side of the story. Also, there's a regulation that says the other party has 11 days to respond to that motion. So that didn't happen. Judge Jenkins also did not certify the record, which is commonly what you do. And maybe she forgot. I mean, those things happen. But it is important in this case because the litigant complained at our oversight, wrote letters, I believe, to the cost, and I believe we also received another letter. Also like to correct what that complainant, the petitioner or complainant, I guess we could say now, stated in her or his letter. It was not, as Judge Jenkins says, she was not mad that where's Judge Barber? Where's Judge Barber? They were concerned that Judge Barber previously allowed them to communicate via email. Now, that doesn't mean Judge Jenkins has to. So that was something that's, you know, these things happen. But additionally, the issue was the transparency and the apparent lack of due process that Judge Jenkins showed this case in not allowing the person to respond to the motion and kind of quickly turning it over. And at the same time, also, DCRA, the builder, and Judge Jenkins had a responsibility at the time when that motion to reconsider was filed to check and see if the appeal has been filed. Therefore, OAH would have no jurisdiction. On February 3rd, the builder filed an appeal. So that was going on at the same time. Then on February 18th, we had our oversight hearing. And in the oversight hearing, this person who wrote the letter testified. So then we learned about it. You know, it's kind of all happening at the same time. Brought it to Judge Jenkins' attention, as we would any judge if there was a complaint, you know, just so we get, you know, we can handle it. Judge Jenkins was actually watching the hearing, so that's fine, she knew. And and on March 8th, she reversed her reversal. So this belief of, you know, I know all the, you know, I know the, I understand this kind of stuff, I know what's going on, I can do this quickly, is a little rebutted by her reversing of her own reversal. And so at that point, she split the baby, reversed it again, and then remanded it partially down to DCRA. Now, this is just one case, you know, and this is what happened, but this is an example, and this is something that the litigant complained about, and it was a valid complaint.
All right.
Judge Wiggins. Mm-hmm. Without conceding that Judge Jenkins did anything inappropriate in that particular case, you know, the point to be made is that after a 12-year tenure issuing thousands of orders, never having been reversed by the Court of Appeals, it's ironic that OAH Chief Judge General Counsel Natalie, you know, make such a huge point of one case. I am guarantee you that of all the orders that I've issued, and I dare say some, ma'am, that you have issued, that there's going to be a litigant that's going to be able to go through it and find a whole lot of things that they think I did incorrectly. The fact of the matter is, if it hasn't gone up on appeal and hasn't been reversed, presumably I did the right thing. And I think that's the case in Judge Jenkins.
Okay. Does anyone have any other questions? I know you're represented by counsel today, Judge Jenkins. Is there anything else that you wanted to say? I just want to make sure you...
Yeah, it was a technical correction, really, to just send it, the entire case back.
Okay.
The entire case back. So that's why I made the last amendment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else from you, Judge Engler?
No, ma'am. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. OAH?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. So as the chair, I'm going to move to close the meeting pursuant to D.C. Code 2-575B10 to discuss amongst other things the appointment of OAH ALJ Jenkins. So I will now take a vote to close the meeting. I, Judge Williams, vote to close this meeting so we can have this discussion. Do you agree, Judge Onick?
Yes.
Not Judge Onick, Joe Onick. Do you agree, Nadine Wilburn?
Yes.
Do you agree, Rob Hawkins? Do you agree, Chief Judge Adams?
Yes.
Okay, all members of the commission have voted in favor of closing this meeting. Therefore, this meeting is officially closed for now. We'll let you know when we resume. Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we wait, Chief?
Yes, we'll make a decision.